Good morning. It's 8:09. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. I'm in for Leslie Thatcher today. We have 34 degrees here in Park City. Stay tuned for the local news and information. Local news interviews include Summit County Assistant Manager Jana Young, first off, with a preview of the County Council meeting tomorrow. Then Bruce Erickson will tell us about the Planning Commission meeting that is also scheduled for tomorrow. And finally, Cheryl Fox, Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy, is in with an update on some events coming up, including their latest initiative to save a 106-acre parcel along the Weber River in Peoa. It's Tuesday, September 8th. Stay with us. Well, Park City's traditional events are still being COVID canceled through the next couple of months. Rick Bruff reports the Park City Council will confer with its staff soon about the prospects for this winter and, of course, into 2021.
Park City's Economic Program Manager Jenny Dearson, looking over the year so far, said they were lucky that they got through most of the 2019-20 winter season before the coronavirus lockdown in the spring. She said the summer was tough for some, but the results were somewhat more positive than they expected.
We've been fortunate to have a very wonderful summer, both with weather and also is surprisingly doing better with the economy than we might have expected. That being said, some businesses are struggling, and so we're looking for those ideas of how to be resilient and to really go into recovery in the winter as well.
Dearson said two major events they are working on are the Sundance Film Festival, which has been scaled back, and the World Cup at Deer Valley. Also, the contract between the city and the Triple Crown softball tournament expires this year. And while the event organizers did not like the city's restrictions this summer, Dearson said they're seeking to extend their contract. City Council will discuss the event in a work session on September 17th. In the meantime, she said that businesses, nonprofits, and event managers are all trying to figure out how to come back from the impacts of COVID-19.
So rather it's PPE or increased cleaning or, you know, figuring out how to extend the businesses outside and stay outside in the fresh mountain air instead of being inside. There's all sorts of things we're trying to figure out how to do to really to help support these businesses and our employees and our community as a whole.
Park City Economic Program Manager Jenny Dearson. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Republic Services, a proud supporter of KPCW, provides an essential service to our communities. We're working to keep our collection routes running smoothly and our communities clean. We are here today and in the months ahead, and will continue to do what we can for all Summit County Recycling and Waste Disposal Services. Learn more at summitcountyrecycles.org.
Well, Saturday was the last car-free Saturday on Park City's Main Street. The historic Park City Alliance has been implementing car-free weekends as a way to stimulate local businesses during the COVID-19 pandemic. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
After the success of car-free Sundays on Park City's Main Street earlier in the summer, the historic Park City Alliance has also been experimenting with car-free Saturdays. Concerns from some local business owners about the effects of closing the street to car traffic all weekend long prompted the HPCA to cancel the one remaining car-free Saturday that was approved by the Park City Council on October 5th. Laura Long is a manager at the Spur Bar and Grill and tells KPCW summer business has been better than expected considering all of the health restrictions during the pandemic. She says weekends have been good, especially Sundays, but Saturdays have been a little more inconsistent.
I mean, it's awesome for us, especially Sundays. I mean, these Saturdays are great, but they're just kind of hit and miss, you know? So, we love them. So they've made Sundays really great. I mean, I would definitely say that it's a struggle compared to what we're used to, but, we'll survive and hopefully it won't continue like this, basically. We do have a large enough area that we're able to have a lot of tables, and so, you know, we can generate some revenue with table service, thankfully.
Many restaurants, bars, and cafes have managed to stay afloat during the pandemic, but concerns have been raised by other businesses who say they have been adversely affected by no car traffic on the weekends. Art dealers and other high-end retailers say business has been hurt because their clientele does not want to walk long distances to their cars carrying large or expensive merchandise. Utah artist Stephanie Hawk was selling her pieces in a booth on the street on Saturday and says she thinks the car-free environment encourages more people to walk up and see what she has for sale.
I think it lends itself to a good kind of crowd of people that just want to come out and enjoy strolling and being outside and, you know, kind of enjoying the charm of Main Street already with all the shops and the whole life up here.
Although Car-Free Saturdays may be over, Car-Free Sundays on Main Street will continue through October 25th. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Good morning. It is 8:15. Listening to the local news hour here on KPCW, I'm Carolyn Murray. First up on the phone, we have Jenna Young. She's the Assistant Summit County Manager here to give us an update on some, to give us an update on Wednesday's County Council agenda. Good morning, Sarah, or Jenna.
Good morning, Carolyn.
Hey, so can we start off first with a hideout update from the town council meeting on Friday and tell us what's happening
next? So I can certainly speak to some of this. I should add as a disclaimer, though, that I am not the authority on this issue. It's really being handled by our county attorney's office and Tom Fisher, our county manager. But a couple of updates that I can share. As listeners may be aware, in August, the legislature had a special session and did repeal the legislation that allowed the town of Hideout to annex property within the county without getting our permission. Unfortunately, that does not go into effect for 60 days. And so last week, the town of Hideout had a town council meeting, and they made it very clear that they are moving ahead with their plans to annex. The county council and our attorney's office continue to work on this issue. In fact, there are additional filings that we have made, and there will be a hearing tomorrow morning on another temporary restraining order. We did get a favorable ruling by Judge Brown last week that basically enjoined the town of Hideout from continuing to go forward with land that had been in their pre-annexation declaration agreement. So, you know, I also think it's important for listeners to know that the county had an opportunity. We had the town of Hideout reach out to us wanting to work on a settlement agreement, and it was during those negotiations that we made it clear we are very interested in doing regional planning with them and coming up with a solution that was mutually beneficial to both of our entities. Unfortunately, we actually got to the point where our county attorney, Margaret Olson, signed that agreement. Tom Fisher, our county manager, signed that agreement. But when it went back to the town of Hideout, they reneged and decided they didn't want to go forward with that. So we're back in this position where we're, you know, trying to continue to preserve our authority on lands within our borders and follow through on carefully planning those areas with our elected officials and our citizens. So this is definitely an issue that we continue to spend a lot of time on and a lot of focus.
And is there an October deadline that has to be met if this is to go through for the town?
So I'm not familiar, like I said, with those details or the timeline. I do know in order to, you know, there is a process just like we have whenever you're going through something like this that involves public hearings and public process, and there are deadlines and time stipulations. So it's possible that you know, that would be part of it. And in order for them to get this done before the 60 days in which that law would be repealed, I imagine that there must be a deadline they have to meet in order to follow or to fit that stipulation.
Okay. Let's move on to the agenda for tomorrow. The council will consider a decision on the appeal to allow Colby as bed and breakfast in. The appeal record is over 670 pages. Will counsel hear further from the attorneys before they discuss coming to a decision?
So I think they've already had that discussion with the attorneys. If for those who were tuned in to our meeting last week, this issue did come up, and there was some questions about certain language in our code that the council wanted to have a chance to discuss with the attorneys. And so they did meet in closed session, I believe, to have that discussion. Again, just for some background for your listeners, this company, an LLC, had applied to turn the former Colby School site into a bed and breakfast. That went before the Planning Commission earlier in March, and they denied the applicant's request for a conditional use permit in order to create this bed and breakfast, concluding that as an LLC, they did not meet the requirement that in order to be a bed and breakfast, it has to be in an owner-occupied facility. Obviously, the company is appealing that decision. That's why the council is considering it. They feel that view from the Planning Commission was very much too narrow, and that they feel they did meet that requirement. So, again, we're expecting some discussion on this from the council tomorrow, and we'll see what they end up deciding to do.
Okay, so it is a decision item then for the council tomorrow.
It would be, yeah. They have to either decide to uphold the denial of the conditional use permit or grant the appeal and grant that permit, or they have other options of maybe granting it with some additional conditions.
Okay, and have you heard feedback from the surrounding neighborhoods about concerns over it not being owner-occupied? Has that been a real sticking point, and is that why the Planning Commission recommended that it be denied?
I'm not aware of that feedback. There was a letter in the packet materials for the hearing from someone who was supportive of the bed and breakfast. I think the Planning Commission was just, you know, looking at, you know, there's thresholds that have to be met and criteria that have to be met in order to approve these permits. And I think they just felt like the applicant failed to meet that one.
Okay. And as part of that approval, will there have to be some kind of remodel done or changes to the structure itself that you're aware of?
Yeah, that in the application, they do propose remodeling the facility to an 8-unit bed and breakfast with another on-site dwelling for a caretaker. So they make it clear there will be some remodels done to that building.
Okay, great. Let's talk about Mountain Regional Water District. They presented a study on increasing their wholesale water rate. And there's a relationship, a water combine that was from 2013. It was approved in the basin, and it led to Mountain Regional selling water to Weber Basin Water District, which would in turn sell to Summit Water. So it looks like they're looking at water rate increases for Weber Basin as a result. This isn't for residential customers, is it?
Well, so maybe it'd be helpful to take a quick step back and just explain Mountain Regional's role in this regional water supply. So in 2000, Summit County Council created Mountain Regional Water Special Service District as a governmental water district to unify, repair, and upgrade many of the water systems in Western Summit County, which were struggling with water availability and water quality issues. So it's entirely within that vein that, you know, it was no surprise in 2016, Mountain Regional signed an agreement with entities like you mentioned, Weber Basin Water Conservancy District and others in the area to provide that regional water supply to those companies who then are providing water to other communities, including the Park City area. And this was, I think, to avoid having to construct a new intake facility, which Mountain Regional Water already has one in the Rockport Reservoir where the Weber River comes down into. And so in 2019, Mountain Regional performed an internal rate study to evaluate the cost of providing that regional water supply and discovered that a rate increase was needed specifically with the Weber Basin Water Conservancy District. And so they brought that to the county council during the discussion in 2019 about their 2020 budget. And the county council recommended stepping in that rate increase over time as a way to limit burdensome impacts on customers, as surely those costs would be shifted to. At the same time, Mountain Regional also committed to contracting this year with an independent third-party financial advisor to evaluate that regional water supply rate and provide recommendations. So that is the study that, and those recommendations that will be presented to the council tomorrow. I am not as versed on the details of those rates or the recommendations, so I will certainly be tuning into Scott Morrison's presentation tomorrow when he discusses this with the council.
Okay, and is it being considered a rate increase then? And would the council be the entity that decides that?
So again, I'm not familiar with exactly what they're recommending, but I can tell you the council does not decide the rates. The Mountain Regional Water Special Service District has a separate board that will be determining or approving rates, but the council serves as the administrative control board over the special service district. So typically things like this, they like to know about. They're not approving anything tomorrow. It's just a briefing or a work session where Scott Morrison, the general manager, will explain the recommendations. And it gives the council an opportunity to ask questions about it in a public meeting. So if they are concerned about adverse impacts, they can have that discussion with Scott.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. 6 p.m. public hearing is on the agenda on these planning items, and I don't know how conversant you are with these, but the last neighborhood mixed-use hearing in August drew some very concerned and critical citizens. In fact, some of the same people who have criticized Dakota Pacific. And do you think council is close to an approval?
You know, I don't like to speak for the council. This is really entirely under their purview. I have no idea where they're leaning on this issue. I do know that they've continued this from an August discussion because they wanted more time. You know, we received a ton of public feedback and they wanted time to consider that feedback and to have a discussion about it. I can also tell you that this neighborhood mixed use zone is a concept that our staff has been exploring with the Planning Commission and even the council since, 2017, maybe even earlier, as a potential tool to fulfill the vision of nodal development within our community. This concept of allowing growth and amenities, but in a contained or controlled way so that we don't get sprawl. And we have connectivity between our communities. We have transit-oriented development. And while at the same time being able to preserve our open spaces and the beautiful vistas that so many of us love about living here. So this was actually brought forward to the council by an applicant who was requesting that the development code be amended to allow this type of zone. I think it is important to note that if the council does approve this, it merely makes it an option within our development code. It doesn't automatically create these zone districts. A developer would still have to go through the process of applying for that and meet the criteria required.
Okay. And as far as Dakota Pacific, that conversation is scheduled at what time?
I don't believe the Dakota Pacific is on the agenda for tomorrow. I'm not aware of when that's coming up again. The three public hearings tomorrow deal with this neighborhood mixed-use zone and then the master plan development process, which would replace, if approved, would replace the typical specially planned area or SPA process, which we already have this in our Eastern Summit County Planning Code, but not on in the Snyderville Basin. So again, going back to the MMU discussion, if a person would want to, or a developer would want to apply for that, they would have to go through the MPD process, assuming that the council adopts that ordinance tomorrow as well. And MPD is the master plan development process is really just a more robust tool than what the SPA currently allows for, again, processing rezone applications and things like that. It really is more of a comprehensive project design strategy that's intended to provide opportunities and to create projects that address site conditions and other characteristics that we couldn't do currently under our SPA process.
Okay, okay. And that's all at 6 p.m., starting at 6 p.m. after the public hearing.
Yeah, unless the council earlier in their agenda runs a little late, which sometimes does happen, but we will not be doing public hearings before 6 p.m. How about that?
Okay, that sounds good then. and then just one final thing. It looks like council is going to review and possibly approve documents to deal with Rocky Mountain Power, and that is to get a net 100% renewable for county operations. And I guess the solar project in Tooele County is the source of that. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, I'm really glad I get a chance to talk about this. I was hoping you would come back to this item because this is a really exciting milestone achievement, and I'm honored that I get to be the one to talk about it on the radio. So we've mentioned several times on this program about Council's environmental stewardship goal to transition to a net 100% renewable electrical energy by the year 2030. That is also part of their larger goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions within the county. So I'm happy to say we will reach that 100% renewable electrical energy milestone this week, which is 7 years ahead of the target. And what I mean by that is in January of this year, with the blessing of the county council, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher executed a renewable energy service contract with Rocky Mountain Power in order to get this renewable energy. However, that contract is non-binding until the appendices are inserted that define the cost and the term of the agreement. So we finally have those appendices. The staff will be presenting those to the council tomorrow. The good news is the rates have come in lower than what was originally stated. It's going to be 2.37% instead of 2.6% above the cost of standard electricity. And that rate will be fixed for us for the next 20 years. As you mentioned, it does involve building a solar farm in Tooele County, which Rocky Mountain Power has contracted with a developer to do. That's where we will get our renewable energy from. And we are expecting construction on that to January of 2021 and to actually be receiving that electricity by 2023. If you allow me, I do want to make sure that I acknowledge the efforts of Lisa Yoder, the county's sustainability manager, on this project over the last several years. Lisa's dedication and her partnership with all the stakeholders involved in the initiative, including Park City Municipal Corporation and Salt Lake City, is truly the reason why we're here today. So thank you so much, Lisa, for your diligence and hard work on this effort. I also want to acknowledge Dave Thomas in the county attorney's office. He also provided support and legal guidance to Lisa and worked really hard on this initiative. So certainly something to celebrate. It's a huge milestone for the county. We've been working on this a long time. It's an example of even despite the pandemic, the county government is continuing to do our work and follow through on these commitments made to our community.
Yes, indeed. Well, congratulations then to the entire team there. We'll have to.
Yes, thank you.
We'll have to tie this up. It is that's Jana Young, the Assistant Summit County Manager, on the line with us. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Carolyn.
Well, the Park City Planning Director, Bruce Erickson, is our next Local News Hour interview. He'll be coming on to give us a preview of the upcoming Wednesday afternoon Planning Commission meeting. And good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Carolyn.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. The work session includes a code update for lighting in consideration of the Dark Skies Initiative. What will you be considering in this portion of the meeting?
Well, excuse me. The current code has a bunch of night sky, dark sky considerations in it, but the code was written back in the Dark Ages. So the first thing we're doing is bringing all the lighting standards up to current, which includes moving to LEDs, which includes moving away from foot candles and moving to lumens, which does a better job of shielding lights and downlit, and also increases the ability to enforce night sky. So it's a combination of some other cities' codes and the Dark Sky Organization code.
Okay. And are there other towns in Utah that have these kinds of regulations in place now?
Moab does. I think that's the only one in Utah, but I could be wrong.
Okay. And what sorts of regulations are they, just for the pedestrian listener here? What does that look like?
Well, so it's everything from what we do with our streetlights to, you know, outdoor lights around your house and gas station lights and main street lights and this and that and the other thing. So it's the entire suite of lights that we're trying to manage not going into the night sky.
Okay.
So things, but basically, it's just updating the standards to 2020 and getting rid of the standards from 1980. Mostly, we've been doing pretty good out of night sky. You know, once you get out into the Park Meadows neighborhood or the Thames neighborhood or portions of Prospector, you've got a pretty good shot at it. Deer Valley and Empire Pass are doing a pretty good job. Under the current regulations, we're just trying to get everybody to move to LED and make sure we understand the color spectrum of those LEDs. And I'll give you a little background. There are certain colors in LED that do a very good job of giving you good color rendition, especially on the human skin. So we're looking for a little bit warmer color, and we've established a standard for that, in accordance with the national standards, of about 2,700 lumens to about 3,000 lumens. Kelvin, excuse me.
So let me ask this, though. You know, a lot of times I'll notice, of course, in my neighborhood of Park Meadows, there are big globes. These lights can shine into your, you know, rooms at night, that kind of thing. They're certainly not shining downward. The light is, you know, basically spilling into the night sky. Will those appliances be replaced? Will those eventually go?
Is that is it
lighting?
A street sign, or is it somebody's driveway light?
It's a street light. There are big round globes, and I'm just wondering.
Yes,
is that part
at some
of,
point we have a 5-year clock on compliance of trying to make sure that we're trying to make sure we've got proper intersection lighting, but not try and light up people's bedrooms with our street lights.
Okay, great. And then as far as retroactive compliance, are there projects out there that will need to adjust that are even underway now with, you know, with the 1980s code standards?
For the most part, we've been able to bring them into compliance at this point without having the code 100% in place, just saying use LEDs. And LEDs are so much more efficient than the regular fluorescent bulbs or the high pressure or the low pressure sodium that it just makes sense for the developer to do it correctly. I think the only place that we have a hard spot is people have a tendency, whether you're in a big custom home or you're in a development, to use lighting as an architecture on the outside of the house, and that's not really something that we allow in the code. So that's where our normal arguments come with our development community, is you can't be lighting up your building. You can light up doors and windows, you can light up the walkway, but you can't light up the building just because you think it looks nice. The other place we get in trouble is people keep trying to do, you know, fairly rigorous outdoor landscaping projects with night lighting, and that's not really permitted either.
Okay. Okay, great. So all of that will be addressed then in the agenda coming up on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's coming up on a work session, and then the planners will take a look at the code and see what we need to do to tune everything up and make sure we get all the public input we can.
Okay.
Also, the two ski areas are giving us input on it with respect to night skiing operations at Park City Mountain and, you know, how Deer Valley wants to handle its night operations. Deer Valley does not ski at night, but their restaurants are open. And so they need to do some lighting for that, too. So both of the ski areas are talking to us.
Okay. Okay, great. Let's move on to the land management code amendments. And this is on the regular agenda. It sounds like there's a bunch of them. Height and setback approvals, public hearings required public hearings prior to approval, some conditional use studies, traffic mitigation. Can you talk about the most important elements in there and what you hope to have come out of that meeting tomorrow?
Oh, Carolyn, you went from hard to harder. These are very, very technical amendments inside of our MPD code. We're really not changing the philosophy of the regulation. What we're trying to do is clean it up and make it more consistent with state code. So if you were a developer, you'd have to go back and forth between the master plan development code and the conditional use permit to try and figure out what you were supposed to be doing. And there were certain requirements in the conditional use permit that weren't in the master plan development. And there were certain requirements in the master plan development code that were not in the conditional use permit. So what we're doing is we're trying to bifurcate all of that and then go ahead and scrub each one of the uses in each one of the zones so that if you do an MPD or a master plan development, what you're doing is in accordance with the master plan development approval and what's happening in the underlying zone. So all the public hearing stuff hasn't changed except for one thing, and that is under the current code, the development agreement ratification is just signed by the planning commission chair. And now we're talking about having a final public hearing on the development agreement ratification and then having it signed by the mayor. That's the major change on that one.
Okay. And then it also looks like you've got a Richardson Flat update on the agenda. What's that?
That's the Richardson Flat is, excuse me, the area around Hideout and our annexation policy out there. We're just going to give you a quick briefing. We can't say very much about it because, as you just heard from the county attorney's working on it, city attorney's working on it. We're in a number of conversations, so we're not going to be able to give a detailed briefing. But we told the Planning Commission we'd come back and tell them what we knew, and basically we're not going to be able to say very much.
Okay. Okay, kind of basically what we've talked about in our
Yeah, exactly. What you and I just talked about was, you know, the attorneys are working on it. They're looking at all their options. They're trying to figure out how all this is going to work.
Okay, and then just the last item here that I have is the Twisted Branch Road, which is back on the agenda. Can you talk about what you're hoping to have happen with that?
Yep. Unfortunately, Twisted Branch is going to get continued again. There's a lot of technical underpinnings in the Twisted Branch application and in how Twisted Branch was approved. Once again, the city attorney's office and the applicant's attorney are working through the final details before we can do a final staff report for that one. So it's going to get continued.
Okay. Okay. Any time frame that you're thinking it will be back then?
I haven't had a chance to hear back on that. It won't be long. It could be in the next month. depending on how all this works.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about the meeting coming up tomorrow, Bruce?
Just really quickly, we have a note of appreciation on our agenda inside the staff communications. And we just want to give a shout out to Hannah Tyler, who's been with us for 9 years and is moving to San Clemente. So we're in the process of trying to replace her, which is virtually impossible.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, that's bad news for Park City, I guess, but good luck to Hannah Tyler, and thanks for her work.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's nothing anybody can do. This is just one of those things that happens, and she's going to go off and make her life, and we'll find a good replacement for her.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce Erickson. That is the planning director, Bruce Erickson, giving us an update on tomorrow's, a preview on tomorrow's meeting. Thanks for joining us. Yes, good morning. It's 8:47, and coming up, getting her on the line right now, Cheryl Fox, the executive director of the Summit Land Conservancy. She will be talking to us about some events that are coming up this weekend, and also the current open space initiative going on at the Conservancy. And then, of course, the Jackalope Party, which is kind of an interesting twist on managing these very difficult times of COVID-19. Good morning, Cheryl Fox.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. So this weekend, it's Get Outside with the Summit County or Summit Land Conservancy. And it sounds like you've got some partnering going on with Recycle Utah for a cleanup of Poison Creek. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
That's right. We're excited to do this. And, you know, Communities That Care is partnering with us, as well as Park City Municipal and Recycle Utah. And, you know, Poison Creek runs down behind City Park and along the rail trail. And it's, you know, this beautiful little area. But, a lot of trash gets blown in there, and then the trees and the shrubs catch the trash, and then it gets kind of down in the creek. So we thought, September 11th would be a good afternoon to get out there. And so we're inviting people to come. We asked them to sign up because we need to have people sign a waiver and that kind of thing. But it will start at 2:00, and people can meet either at the rail trail behind White Pine Touring or at the bandstand in City Park. Bring masks as well as galoshes if you have them, and waterproof gloves, because we do want to kind of get in and really get down in there and get the trash picked up.
Does anybody under 50 know what galoshes are?
I don't know.
That's a
good question. Rubber boots.
Rubber boots. Okay. Yeah, gloves.
Wellies.
Rubber boots, maybe waders, maybe hip waders or something along those lines.
That's maybe more than is necessary, but that works too, yes.
Okay, I know I didn't put that question on the preview of this interview, so apologies on that. So then Monday, on September 14th, next Monday, we've got a nature bathing hike. Tell us about that.
So we've been doing these, again, with communities that care this summer. And, you know, we've been doing hops hikes for many years, and we've been doing moonshine adventures where we go out and run or hike or bike in the dark or ski. And this is a new addition to our sort of ways to get people outside this summer. And basically, it's a meditative walk in nature. And so we gather together. Again, you have to sign up at wesaveland.org and click on the happenings tab, because, you know, we can't overwhelm, right? If there's 50 people on a trail, it's just a little bit too much. So there are a limited number of spaces, but it is free. So just sign up online, show up with your mask and a blanket or something to sit on. And you hike in silence. And you have a meditative experience at a certain point in the hike. And then you hike down, and it is just so replenishing for the soul. Mary Krista Smith leads these, and it's just a really beautiful experience. So we all know how the open spaces have nurtured us during this pandemic, and this is a way to really deepen that experience a little bit if people are interested. So the next one is Monday. They've been going every other Monday at 6 p.m. And it takes about an hour and a half. And I think that, you know, as the seasons change, we may change our time on that a little bit. But this next Monday is still at 6 o'clock.
Okay. And where do people meet for that?
This one is in the Gamble Oak open space. So the meeting will be on April Mountain. That information is available more with more detail on the website.
Okay.
Again, wesaveland.org, and then click on the happenings tab.
Okay, on happenings. And then it looks like there's another event coming up September 26th, 9 to noon. And tell us a little bit about that.
That's right. So this is out at the Summit Community Gardens. So that where the Summit Community Gardens is, there next to Matt Canute Park, from the park area all the way to 224 is actually an open space parcel that the Summit Land Conservancy protects. It was purchased by the Snyderville Basin Open Space Committee, Basin Recreation, a number of years ago. And we want to do a little restoration on the, there's a creek that runs through there. And so there will be some tree planting in there along with the Summit Community Gardens and Tree Utah and the Summit Land Conservancy. So again, we need people to sign up on the website because there's always has to be waivers and there's only so many spots that we can handle. So, but that'll be a fun activity, I think, on Saturday the 26th, 9 to noon.
Okay. And then let's talk about your current initiative with Marchant Meadows in Peoa.
Right. This is super exciting. You know, as we continue to work to save open spaces, again, the open spaces that we were able to enjoy during the pandemic and get out and, you know, have exercise and have a place to walk our dogs. We're working with... Basically, the long and short of it is we have a piece of property under contract in Peoa. It's right on Wooden Shoe Lane. So if people mountain bike at all or road bike out into the Peoa Camas Valley, I'm sure they're going by this property. It's 106 acres. It has two branches of the Weber River on it, and it is just absolutely, it's beautiful. It's kind of one of those iconic properties. We, the Summit Land Conservancy, is hoping to turn that into a public access natural preserve. So this is a little different from most of the conservation that we do out in Eastern Summit County, where we're working with landowners and we're buying a conservation easement. But those are working lands, and it's oftentimes very difficult to have public access in conjunction with working lands because people have livestock out there and they're, you know, it's their business. This is different because the Summit Land Conservancy, if we're successful, will end up owning this land. And so we can add trails and access to the river. We will probably add a little bit of parking off the road so that people don't have to park on narrow little Wooden Shoe Lane. But we're really excited about it. You know, it's from my house in Park City, it takes the same amount of time to drive to the Empire Pass Trailhead as it does to drive to this property in Peoa. So... if you want to, you know, I mean, it's like, so we think this is going to be sort of a lovely place if people want to go walk in the shade, look at the river, fish in the river, that type of thing. The thing is that in order to purchase this property, we need to come up with $450,000 by October 15th. So that's about 6 weeks away. So right now we have $100,000 in matching grants. So if people would like to make a gift, they can go to wesaveland.org and their donations will be doubled.
Okay, so it's an additional $450 you need in addition to what you have now.
The $100,000, if I can make that will count towards the $450.
Okay, and that would turn into $200,000 because it's a matching grant.
Exactly. And then okay. I'd be a whole lot closer.
Yes, you would. Okay.
Right.
So this, the October 15th deadline, what happens if you don't hit that deadline? Do you lose the option or what goes on?
Yeah. So we will, so the deal is we're going to buy the land and our closing date is the end of October. So we need to have the money in hand by about the middle of October.
if we don't have, and then, right, the, we're not buying this property for $450,000, right? It's worth way more than that. So we will get a loan for the rest of the money in order to purchase it. But a loan is expensive, and it will be a bridge loan, which means we only need it for about 10 months. Most of the funding to secure this property will come from the big Regional Conservation Partners Program from the federal government that we were awarded back in April. So $3.5 million will come from that granting source, but it takes a long time for the federal government to get all of its papers lined up and release that money. So we need to buy the land now, and then we'll, you know, it, with a loan. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in order to get that loan, right, I need to bring cash to closing, and that's why I need the $450,000. From the community. I mean, we're already also, we have grant applications out there, and we also have been awarded, again, from Summit County. The Eastern Summit County Agricultural Preservation Committee has given us an award of $250,000. So that's, I need all of this in addition to, to get to closing, right? Because you have to have, you know, a pretty good percentage down to close on the property.
Yeah. Okay. And that's wesaveland.org. And you can just do a /SaveMarchantMeadows and make that donation
exactly
through that tab. Okay. Let's talk about the Jackalope Party. Well, first of all, I have to say those cups that have been included in that basket to donors, they're pretty amazing, actually, for keeping things warm.
Oh.
Really nice.
Well, good.
Yeah. And let's tell listeners how that's related to the Jackalope Party.
Well, the Jackalope Party, it, like the Jackalope itself, it does not exist. So we could not have our regular summer gala this year because we just couldn't get everybody in a room together. So we decided to do a party that doesn't exist. It happens in your own home. And we are encouraging people to visit our website. Again, wesaveland.org, and you can do, you know, /Jackalope, but it's on the homepage. This is not even a virtual event. Like, there's not a time where you have to sit down and we all sit down together and do this. This is at your leisure. Visit the website. Watch our funny little short video. Look at the very unique and interesting items in our silent auction. I can safely say that you probably have never seen items like this in any silent auction anywhere. You know, we were really sensitive to our community in this situation, and we didn't want to go out and ask local businesses for free stuff when we understand that they're already nervous. You know, what's the winter going to look like? So we did have some auction items that had been given to us before the pandemic hit from Vail Epic Promise. So there are some trips and things on there, but there we also sort of found our offices, which we share with Mountain Trails Foundation at the old health clinic behind the old Maverick on Bonanza Drive. And we looked around and we thought, what do we have here that we could auction off? So I would encourage people to visit, again, wesaveland.org, look at the Jackalope Party, look at our priceless and one-of-a-kind auction items. And I really hope that people will step up and support open space, because this is the kind of thing that allows us to do all of the things we do, whether those are the hikes or saving places like Marchant Meadows or anything else. You know, at this point, we have 2 projects in Wasatch County, 5 projects in Summit County, and 1 project in Weber County that we're all moving forward. So we really appreciate people's support.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you. We're going to have to wrap this up. That is Cheryl Fox, Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy. Thanks for that update.
Thank you so much.
Bye now.